Yeah, I think what the, probably the reason why a lot of people find God in jail is because it's such a humbling experience. Like, you know, we must decrease for him to increase. And so when you're in jail, you are certainly decreased to like your least self.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. The purpose of this show is to share stories of hardship and victory as an encouragement for those in the middle of their own hard thing. Because we know hardship produces perseverance, which produces character, which ultimately produces hope. Today's guest is Jared Graybeal. Jared is the founder of the Xenos Games, a CrossFit competition redefining the status quo. Jared talks about going to jail and having his life altered through two significant experiences behind bars. I hope you enjoy the show, and please don't forget to subscribe. Now here's the conversation with Jared Grady.
I do a couple different things, right? Like, so I moved to Vegas a month ago to start working with the Underdogs Athletics company, crew, team, whatever you want to call it, as a business operations director. So all things business, like I'm doing that with Underdogs. But I also work with Lab Management, which is a sports agency, and work with Cooper and Jason and the team there on basically doing our best to get athletes the opportunities that they deserve and the income that they deserve in order to, you know, pursue their passion of competitive fitness. And of course, Lab Management has other people like in MLB and PGA and stuff like that. And then I have a consulting agency called E3. I work with people, business owners, to help them reach their goals. So very much like a personal trainer when I was younger to help people reach their goals, I did the same thing with business owners, typically in the fitness industry, but not always. And I think for the most part, that's like the majority of what I'm doing right now. But again, I'm an entrepreneur. I take advantage of opportunities. Like the end of this year, we'll be hosting another Xenos game. So when that's going on, like I'm doing that. So, you know, it's a really tough question for me to answer in short. I hate when I meet new people and they're like, what are you doing? It's like, man, I'm either going to sound like really full of myself or I'm going to lie to you. You know what I mean? Like, I'm either going to be long-winded or I'm just going to be like, I'm a consultant.
Did you ever think that this is what you were going to be doing?
You know, it's funny. Yes and no. Like, you know, growing up, of course, we all have aspirations to be somebody. At least we, hopefully we are, we do. But of course, like the circumstances of my upbringing didn't really lead me to believe that I could or would be here today. And so it's really funny. I mean, like as a kid, after I kind of like cycled through the idea of being an architect and an accountant and a math teacher, like all the traditional stuff, I eventually landed on like, I want to be in business. And so that was obviously really vague and general, and having a vague and general vision ultimately got me in a lot of trouble. But I knew I wanted to be in business. And, you know, I did remember wanting to be a sports agent. I don't remember the movie, you know, Show Me the Money. Yeah, you know, so it's kind of cool because when I was working in the health club industry, me and a buddy made a joke that one day we should start a consulting agency to help people in the fitness industry build their businesses. And so now I'm kind of doing all of it. So it's like, when I look back, I'm living like three of my dreams. And so did I really think I'd be here? No. I wouldn't have confidently told people like, I'm going to be doing this in 20 years. But did I have enough confidence to pursue it long-term and ultimately get here? For sure.
I love that you said, you know, the typical like things that kids think about. And one of those was accountant. I'd never thought to be an accountant.
Yeah, I just remember like career day in elementary school. I don't know if you had career day where like people's parents who like firefighter and like a math teacher and a, you know, they come and talk about what they do. And I remember having a sheet of paper that showed like these jobs with this, you know, the income, the average income associated with these jobs, which I think is super unhealthy probably to show to an elementary school kid. Yeah. Because like at the bottom might be like a teacher. And at the top is an accountant. And it's like, well, I don't obviously want to be an accountant then. You know what I mean? Like,
how much more money am I going to make?
Yeah. Like, why would I want to make 28 grand when I can make 120 grand? Right. And so that's the only reason why, because I'm good at math. So as a kid, I was like, oh, I'll be an accountant. And then you like meet an accountant, no offense to any accountants. And you're like, that's not what I want to do. I don't really want to do that full time. Although ironically now as an entrepreneur, I like review finances regularly for different companies. And so it's, I get to sprinkle in a little bit of everything, which is good for me because I don't like to do one thing full time. So
CrossFit, let's talk about CrossFit because you're in the CrossFit world. How did you get plugged into it? What was your first kind of like dip your toe moment?
Oh man. I'll be honest, like me and CrossFit had like a 10-year know each other from a distance kind of relationship before I really decided to drink the juice. I was introduced to CrossFit in 2007. Lakeland, Florida was like one of the first 50 CrossFit affiliates in the world. And so like my buddy's dad owned a bunch of property and one of the properties that he owned ended up becoming a CrossFit. And my buddy was like, you should come to this gym. I had just started working out in 2007. And so like, you know, we're talking about chest on Mondays, back on Tuesdays, arms on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
And he's like, dude, you should come to CrossFit. I'm like, what do they do? And he's like, dude, rope climbs, running, kettlebell swings. I'm like, I want none of that. Like how is any of that going to give me chicks? You know what I mean? I want crunches and bench press and bicep curls.
Yeah.
And so for like 10 years, I was very familiar with it. I would drop in from time to time, you know, to different CrossFit gyms. If I was traveling, I'd get beat up enough to where I'm like, I'm never going back there. You know, like I'm fit, but I'm not athletic. And so like CrossFit is not a natural, adaptation for my like anatomy, you know what I mean? For my mechanics. And so long story short, I ended up doing bodybuilding competitively for a handful of years and then powerlifting. And then in 2017, I did a Spartan race, which was so much fun. Highly recommend anybody doing a mud run, especially with your buddies. And I did a Spartan race and realized how bad I was at running. Like I was having migraines with every step. And I'm talking like I'm 205 back then. I can bench 405, squat 500. Deadlift 500, like, you know, in my mind, I'm fit, like I'm super fit, but I'm trying to run and I'm seeing all these other people just pass me. And I'm like, I'm in so much pain. This is not good. Like, I think the human body should be able to run. Right. And so it was kind of a realization for me, signed up for a couple 5Ks and started to get better at running and kept lifting. Fast forward to 2019. I read the Can't Hurt Me book by David Goggins. Which you just got to be careful reading books like that because it'll motivate you. I should say I listened to it because it's actually better in audiobook form. Okay. But, you know, really motivated me to step outside of my comfort zone because at this point I had been doing like traditional strength training for 10 years. I'm super comfortable. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to sign up for a triathlon. And me and a buddy signed up for a triathlon. And then about a month later, we were like, let's just join CrossFit. Like we're already doing CrossFit every day to train for this trial. Like we're trying to do strength training, we're trying to do aerobic. And so it's like, let's just join, you know. And I lived in Jacksonville Beach at the time, and there was a CrossFit gym like a block from the ocean, right on 3rd Street. We called it Muscle Beach. So we just joined that CrossFit in April of 2019. It was supposed to be like a 1 month thing prior to the triathlon, and just stayed, man. That's all she wrote. Fell in love with the workouts, but the community more or less, because I've been injured on and off ever since then. So, but it's the community, I think, that's most important to me. That's how I start, you know, that's my like entry to CrossFit is officially like April, 2019, I guess.
Yeah. So talk about the community piece. Cause I hear that all the time and I think I've experienced it, right? Like the community of CrossFit is very, it's an even playing field, right? Like no matter where you're at in the scale, everybody's kind of for everybody. And
it's just such a massive community. It's, you know, the cool thing about CrossFit, especially for me coming from like, I'm a fitness professional. They have the largest global fitness footprint in the world. And that's super impressive. The cool thing, you know, you can travel almost anywhere in the world, especially anywhere in the United States. And like, if you're in a city, you can drop into a CrossFit gym and it's like, you belong.
Yeah.
And that's the coolest thing. You don't see that in a lot of, you don't necessarily see that in Orange Theories. You don't see that in F45s. You see like pieces of it, but it's just not the same. You certainly don't see it in Globo gyms. And like, no offense to Globo gyms, they're just not all connected the way that CrossFit is all connected throughout the, you know, throughout the world. But then at the end of the day, it's like CrossFit is so hard. And if you go enough days, let's say you go the whole month, over the like law of averages is going to indicate that you're going to be humbled a handful of times throughout that period. And so is the person next to you and the person next to them, right? So like day one, you might crush it. Yeah. And the person next to you might suck. And then day two, the person next to you might crush it and you might suck. And it's not like that in Globo Gym world. Right. You either are or aren't the man at the Globo Gym. You know what I mean? Like, and so it's so cool to see that, you know, people get to practice different levels of competency. You can come from gymnastics, you can come from running, you can come from lifting, and every, you know, everybody has their day. Yeah. Every dog has his day, right? So, so I really like that aspect too. It's just such a humbling experience. And it, like you said, it levels the playing field for most people. Obviously when you get to like the competitive level and semifinal level, games level, those people are winning every day. But like for the average CrossFitter, all is equal. And that's what's so cool. And even the elites, they hang with the average Joes, right? Like no offense. Right. And so you can drop into some gyms, and the coolest thing about the elites is that you can't just drop into a regular gym and like train with Tom Brady, right? But you can go to, you can drop into maybe CrossFit East Nashville and like Tia will be training 100 feet from you. You know what I mean? Like you can drop into Travis's gym in Alpharetta and CrossFit United, I think. And Noah or Travis or Alexis Raptus might be like across the room from you. Like you don't get to do that with any other sport. And they'll say what's up. So that's just so unique to this sport. And something like that may not last forever, of course, like as the sport grows, obviously fans get crazy and eventually it may not be like this. But I think that's such a unique thing is like we get to see the best in the world and we just get to train with them from time to time if you're in the right gym or whatever. Yeah. And I think for, especially for the community, that's a really cool thing to see.
Yeah, super approachable and like, to the point you were making before, like, and this isn't true to every single human, but like the humility of like everybody started getting really humbled in all those workouts, right? Like they know what it's like to walk into the gym the first time and do a CrossFit workout. And then, but they haven't, it seems like anyways, the elite haven't lost, they haven't forgotten that's where they came from, you know?
Most of them, for sure.
Yeah. Like they still remember the humble beginnings, you know?
Yeah.
And so they can
it, like it stays hard because it's progressive. Your mile time can generally get faster, you know, no matter what, until maybe you age out, like, you know, your squat can get stronger. Your Fran time can get faster. Your, you know, open redo workout score can get better. And so it's like the coolest thing I think is that of course, everybody's competing against other people. That's what makes it like such a community piece, because I think as human beings, we're naturally designed to be relatively competitive. But competing against yourself every day is an opportunity, despite whoever else is around. And that's what gives the elite an opportunity to continue to progress. Even though it's not necessarily a team sport, you can still always get better individually. And so I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, and all of their results are public. So if they don't like them, they got to make them better because everybody knows what they are. The whole purpose though of this conversation, I mean, we're talking a little bit about how hard CrossFit is, but let's talk specifically about your life. Like, in our Elite SRS as a company, like we're a jump rope company. We got into the CrossFit space because jump ropes are a part of it. But our like passion, we're people, and we just get to do it through jump ropes. And so like our little vision statement is we equip and encourage people to do hard things so they grow stronger. Like the encouragement side is stories. You know, how do we like share the stories of where people have been in their difficult seasons that can encourage somebody else? And so that's why we're doing these like conversations and this podcast. So I want to hear your most difficult story, man. What's the hardest thing in your life that you wouldn't take back?
When you say wouldn't take back, it's like, I wouldn't change it.
Yeah. It's like, I can see the value of this.
Yeah. Well, I've had a handful of things happen in my life. So one of the hardest things in my life that I've dealt with that has provided the greatest return is going to jail out of high school. And of course, I've had several challenges and trials along the way since then. I mean, that's 14 years ago. But this one put me on a long trajectory to where I am now, And so, you know, growing up, like we didn't have a whole lot. And so I've always been as ambitious as I am now. It just didn't really fit into the body and the mind of the child that I was as a kid. And so I started skateboarding at 11, naturally got into smoking cigarettes and weed and drinking alcohol, just because that's kind of the crowd. I don't want to say generally for skateboarders, but where I'm from. And so started selling weed at 11, just because I've always had a capitalistic mindset. And that progressed over the years. By the time I was 17, I lived on my own. I was selling a lot more than when I was 11, of course. And naturally, you know, you break the law long enough, you will get caught. Of course, in Florida, it's very frowned upon. Things are much different now everywhere. So I got arrested for selling weed and got charged as an adult. And they waited until after high school to sentence me. And so I spent the summer after my senior year in jail. And during that time, when I had to quit smoking weed, obviously during like the trial period, I didn't know what to do with my life because I smoked weed professionally, like all day. And people came over and they smoked and I was selling. Like, it was literally like,
it's like Pineapple Express. You're living Pineapple Express.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. It just, I'm not as funny as him, but, So that was my lifestyle. And then when that ended, I didn't really know who I was or what to do. And my buddy was like, you should come to the gym with me. And then I started going to the gym and very shortly afterwards went to jail. But in jail, I would make up workouts every day because there's really nothing to do. And it's not like the movies where like there's a weight bench outside and people are playing basketball and like whatever. Like there's no county jail, especially in Polk County, Florida, totally different than the movies. You're locked up for 23 hours a day. If you choose to go outside, it's like 6:30 a.m. It's foggy and humid and there's a flat basketball. And so like nobody goes outside. Yeah. So you're making up workouts inside. And it's very much like COVID workouts because you're just locked inside. You've got stair sets. You can set up trash cans and do pull-ups from the second floor. And so I would make up workouts every day. And people eventually started coming into my room and being like, what are we doing today? What's the workout today? Yeah. And so that was a natural progression for me. Eventually one day some guy was like, you should be a personal trainer when you get out. And again, like we talked about earlier, I was just familiar with like traditional career opportunities. I didn't really know what a personal trainer was. I didn't grow up like in the gym. So I didn't really know. And he was like, yeah, they just get paid to train people. I'm like, what? Like, this is it for me. Like, I'll do this for the rest of my life. Yeah. So in jail was when I like literally had this eureka moment that I'm going to be a personal trainer. I'm going to be a gym owner. This is a career I'm going to pursue. And also in jail, I was introduced to my faith in God, which has radically changed the trajectory of my lifestyle. Unfortunately, it didn't really stick the way that fitness stuck at that time. It took about, I would say almost 7 years after getting out of jail for like faith to truly be a part of my life. I would have registered as a Christian coming out of jail, but I didn't go to church. I wasn't reading my Bible. I wasn't praying. I wasn't doing, not that you have to do things to be a good Christian, but I wasn't like following Jesus. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was living whatever lifestyle I wanted, if that makes sense. Yeah. So the jail, you know, it radically changed my life. I found fitness, I found God. And those are like, if you created a pie graph of who I am, that'd be like 92%. So
talk about like getting the point where you knew that was happening. It was a reality. They're like, hey, we found out what's going on. This is what's happening. We're charging you as an adult. You're going to jail. Like, what was the mental state that you had? It's like, my life's over, or I'm just going to get through this, then I'm going to be back to where I was. Can't hold me down. Like, what were you?
A little bit of both. I mean, growing up, like from 11 to 17, 18, I had been in and out of like juvie and on and off of probation, but juvenile sentencing, unless you do something crazy, is super mild. My dad gave me a lot of freedom growing up. I would say probably a little bit too much, and clearly, because I got in a lot of trouble. But so I wasn't really afraid of authority. I wasn't scared of going to jail because based on my experience, I always got out like a day later. It was almost a joke to me. And so in the short term, I wasn't very affected by it. Like in school, I had really good grades. I had a full ride scholarship to college. It was more or less like, I'll get in and get out, go to school. Like all my friends, all my friends, we were preparing to go off to college. And so I was like, this is nothing. Like, you know, selling weed for me was just like until I get a good job at college. And so it kind of all abruptly happened, but it took about a couple of days in county jail, like really like probably after my first week of realizing I'm not getting out of here today. Like, yeah. Cause I didn't get sentenced to county. I was waiting my sentencing in county. And I had a $17,500 bond. So you can bond out and wait trial like on bond. Right.
Yeah.
But I didn't, like nobody I knew had that money. Well, one person I knew had that money and his parents eventually were the ones that got me out. But, yeah, like I, you know, I had like one rich friend. And so, so it didn't hit until about a week. And then once like a week passed and I realized like the girl I was dating in high school, you know, I got a letter from her. She's moved, you know, to college. And I'm like, bad timing on my end. You know, and so like I got a letter from my mom and I'm like, oh man, this is real. Like I'm getting letters, you know, I'm adapting to this culture in jail and like the scrubs ain't coming off, you know? And so it took like a week for me to be like, this is the worst situation that I could possibly be in right now. And, you know, I had a chip on my shoulder growing up because I thought life was so hard. I thought I had it so hard. And sure, I had it like harder than maybe a lot of Americans, but like in the broad scheme of things, it was very well taken care of, you know? And so I just was really selfish and self-absorbed. And so like, but jail was a sort of a reckoning for my mindset of like, I thought that sucked. This sucks. I need to not do whatever I did to that got me here. You know what I mean? And so, so like I said, at first it was more or less like, this is no thing. I'll be out in a couple of days. But then once it really set in and you get used to eating jail food and shit, like,
You're like, this is real life. It's kind of, I have three little kids and, you know, you send them, hey, go sit on the couch or go to your room. If it's like for 1 minute, it's like not painful at all. But if it's for 25 or 30 or whatever the equivalent is, right? It's like, oh, I really did mess this up.
Yeah, it sets in.
This is life, you know, the longer it is, the worse it is for sure. Well, and part of that is like, you know, we're created for community. And it sounds like you found some community when you're in jail, which it gave you some purpose, right? With the training and all that. But then how did the faith piece come into play? Because you hear that from people regularly, like, oh, I was in jail and I found God. And it's like, well, that's really cool. But I'm always wondering, like, what's happening in jail? Like, what's going on? I mean, people are faced with the reality of their life, right? Like, that's a part of it for sure. But, like, what's your story there?
Yeah, I think probably the reason why a lot of people find God in jail is because it's such a humbling experience. Like, you know, we must decrease for him to increase. And so when you're in jail, you are certainly decreased to, like, your least self. But for me, I had grown up like with the option of being a believer. Like I remember asking my dad about it as a kid and he was like, that's totally up to you. He was like, I don't have the best relationship with God. And so it was kind of confusing growing up. But I remember as a teenager, I was an atheist, like not a smart one. Like I couldn't argue probably theology with a Christian. I just, again, I had a chip on my shoulder and I thought, you know, life is hard. There can't be a God.
Yeah.
But in county, it's really, you know, quite an experience. It was literally a weekend to being in jail. And it was like when it had just set in, like, man, I'm not getting out of here. And it was like, I just got the letter from the girl I was dating and I had just gotten a letter from my mom. And I knew if I read the letter from my mom, I was going to cry, like for sure. But like in county, you're in these, it's different everywhere, but you're in a room with like eight people. And so like, for sure, wasn't going to read that letter with everybody in the room, but it was game six of the NBA finals, the Celtics against the Heat. This is 2008, I think. And everyone's downstairs watching the game. Like in county jail, there's like a TV probably this big and it's like 20 feet in the air. So everyone's just like, you know, watching the TV. So I'm like, I'm going to read this letter, for sure going to cry, kind of looking forward to it. So I read it, you know, my mom wrote me some stuff, you know, kind of had like a little manly cry in my room, wiped it off, put the letter away. And I'm on the second floor. County jail is just like a bunch of dorms. It's like A to Z. And you're like in a block cell dorm, two stories. And I'm on the second floor, I'm just walking, and I walk by a room with like 15 people in it. And I just glimpse in, whatever. And I look away because I'm like, what are they doing in there? Like, I had no idea. I'm like, are they planning an escape? Like, it's just literally like what's going through my mind. And one of them's like, homie. And I'm like, oh God, you know, I'm like, what's up? And like, I had grown up around these type of people, right? So I wasn't like worried or intimidated. I just didn't want to have anything to do with what they were doing.
Right.
And they were like, do you believe in God? And I was like, nah. And they were like, well, he believes in you. Come in here and have a seat. And I was like, I don't have anything. I don't like basketball. Yeah. I mean, I like basketball, but I wasn't really into it, you know? So I went in and have a seat, and it was really interesting to see like a group of, you know, for lack of better words, criminals like shuffle around to make a place for me to sit, get me a pencil, get me a piece of paper, just like a little bit of grace that isn't very common in the county jail. And so I sat down and I listened to this guy. We called him Preacher Man. Preach a message. And it was from, I think, 2 Peter, and talking about us as humans, you know, we're a royal priesthood, we're brothers and sisters in Christ, we're sons of God, like just all the things that we are, and we're not our sin, we're not our crimes, those are things that we have done and we got to face the repercussions, but that's not who we are. And I remember very vividly listening to this, and I had been to church so many times growing up just with different friends, and just for fun, you know, it wasn't like a spiritual thing for me. But this is the first time that I felt like the tangible presence of God, and it shook me, and, you know, gave my life to God that night. And it's crazy, man, you know? So then after that, like in jail, I began to read the Bible. We had like a little Bible study once a week. It was very confusing. We had a Sunday mass that you could go to. So you've got like a Catholic priest that comes on Sunday. We've got church group midweek with a handful of guys that probably shouldn't be teaching the Bible. And I'm reading through the Old Testament. So I'm just getting thrown in many different directions. And I don't think any of them are inherently wrong, but it didn't really help me a whole lot. Like you mentioned, we're designed for community, and county jail, there's salvation exists everywhere, but sanctification is a process that requires the right people around you. And so sanctification, you know, the same people that were in the Bible study group are still stealing and fighting the next day. And you're like, oh, yeah, I guess we don't have to change, you know, like,
right.
So like I said, when I got out of jail, I didn't really have like an idea of like, oh, some of my behavior should probably change if I'm going to register myself as a Christian. So that's how I found God in jail.
Dude, it's, your story is cool. Cause you know, there's this like emotional moment that you had on your own, nobody knew about. And then all it took, right, was this one guy to say, hey, what do you believe? Like, it wasn't complicated. And it's like, God knew what you needed, right? Like, you were good soil at the moment that the question got asked.
Like, it was. I think I always grew up thinking that, like, Christians are these polished people. Like, and I, you know, I didn't really grow up in that way. Like, we grew up on the other side of the tracks. You know what I mean? So it's like, I had friends growing up where their parents were still married and they were all happy. And I'm like, oh, they get to be Christians. Yeah, they're like clean, you know, healthy, happy people. And so like, I think being exposed to a group of criminals that at that time I would have registered with, I was like, oh, this is for everybody. Right. And, you know, it's certainly for me at this stage of my life. And so,
So does that experience, like in the background that you have, I mean, that's reality, right? There's this, I think like, as a person, we have this tendency, and you've said the word humble multiple times already today, but we have this tendency to like present the good version of ourselves, right? Even as a Christian, you have the tendency to present the put together version of yourself, at least the most people do. But that's not relatable to a lot of people, right? That aren't in the same space and place that you're in. What's relatable is like the messiness of life. And then like that God intervened, like that God brought me out of this place, or God did this. And so like, does your experience in like growing up the way you did and like feeling like you couldn't relate to the other side of the tracks, so to speak, and then where you were, God met you, change the way that you approach like other people in your faith now?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a radically different person. How we treat other people is highly indicative of how we think about ourselves. And so like growing up, I mean, I was always a people person. I was always a good friend. But if you weren't really in my circle, I didn't care about you. You were a means to an end if it came to my profession or like, you know, whatever it was I was pursuing at the time, right? And as a teenager, it's relatively harmless. But like, if there's a girl I want and you're not really my friend, you don't matter to me. If there's a job I want and you're not, you know what I mean? So, you know, the sanctification process has certainly changed my levels of empathy, sympathy, servanthood, generosity. I mean, not that like I'm far from perfect, but I'm certainly a much more upgraded version of my previous non-believing self. I think mainly it's just that, you know, I live life in a constant state of reminding myself like I'm not the center of the universe. And when I get so self-absorbed, obviously that's when life can get more difficult and I can treat other people bad. But when you remember, like, you know, everyone is equal, we all serve a purpose, we're all part of the same body, we all come from the same place, like everyone is important, you know. And obviously that doesn't mean like I'm certainly not going to treat a stranger the same way that I treat my roommate or something like that, but you know, I certainly can try. And so yeah, I think Christianity has progressively changed my mindset around how to treat people. And then of course you create a habit out of something and then it becomes who you are. And so that's my goal, really, is to continuously become more like Jesus and more like the person that people maybe on social media think I am, and you know, things like that.
Sure. Yeah. So let's go back that hard season, right? That was, what did you say? Was it for a summer that you were?
Yeah, the summer after my senior year, so 2018.
What advice did you get in that season that like helped you get through it? And you talked a little bit about, you know, you got a letter from your mom, you got that, just the pouring into you from that community of people who were Christians. But was there anybody else who like spoke something into your life that was helpful in that season?
Probably not, honestly. I wasn't really surrounded with the best leadership at that time in my life. I read a lot, and that's, I always have. And so I think because, you know, I didn't necessarily like grow up with him. I mean, I had my dad around, and my dad's great. But I didn't have like that mentor. I didn't have like a wise older brother. I didn't have a teacher that, you know, brought me under his wing or something like that. I always learned things the hard way, which, you know, sucks for me, but it's good for everybody else, because I typically end up writing about it or teaching about it or making a podcast, you know, and so hopefully people listen and learn. But no, I didn't really have anybody speaking into me. And that's, I think, why I always go down like the harder road. I always have to sort of learn by my own example. So it's like the lessons, the circumstances of my life were a big enough lesson for me to realize, like, if I want to live a good life, I have to change my behavior. I grew, like I said, I grew up around a bunch of people that seemed like they were handed everything. And so I had a chip on my shoulder for not being handed stuff. And I think the jail, you know, and I went on to do house arrest for 2 years and weekend work release for 2 years. And it was like, okay, I just clearly have a different life than other people. And maybe I'm not going to get handed stuff, but I have to work for it and I have to do it the right way. And so that was more or less a lesson for me to like restart my life and pursue a legitimate career, and to humble myself and realize like nobody's going to hand it to me. I got to go get it myself. And I think my dad told me that at a young age. So kind of to answer your question, I was just reminded of what my dad told me, like, Jared, you're not going to have it easy. And if you want a good life, you're going to have to fight for it, because I can't afford to give it to you. And so like, that's why I always still got good grades in school, because it was like, I wanted to live a normal life at some point. And so luckily it, you know, the hard work I did in school and treating my friends well throughout my lifetime, you know, eventually paid off by kind of changing my goals in terms of my career and my behavior and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So then you didn't necessarily get the advice in the season. Sounds like you had some stuff, you know, from your dad before, but what advice would you have maybe for somebody who who's looking for some like good counsel, like they're in the middle of their own hard season.
Yeah. The seemingly easy way is rarely the right way. And I say that because, you know, haste makes waste, right? Like when you try to push an agenda that clearly doesn't belong, or you try to fit a round peg into a square hole, it's not going to end well. And so, like I mentioned earlier, like you can either learn from others and apply it to your life now, or you can learn the hard way and apply it to your life later. And so now the easy way sometimes works. I'm not going to say easy way is never the right way, right? There's technology and there's application software and there's things like that. So don't miscontextualize that, right? But like when it comes to morality or character or self-awareness, self-development, building the right career, the easy way is rarely the right way. And, you know, especially when you're young. And so there's a lot of learning that has to take place before you truly get what you want in life. It rarely comes to you that easy. And if it doesn't, you should probably be worried.
Well, I mean, and that's like part of what we're acknowledging, right? Like this grow stronger piece is a result of the hard way. Like it doesn't, when there's no resistance and there's no struggle, like what kind of growth can you really expect, right? It's just not a reality. One of the verses in the Bible, Psalm 23, when like people love, you know, like Jesus is a good shepherd and he leads me by still waters and green pastures. And I've probably heard that 1,000 times in my life. But this year it hit me like, you know, he says he leads me on good paths for his name's sake. And then immediately after that, the first path that gets described is the valley of the shadow of death. And it's like, it's not saying that this is not a good path. Like this is still a good path. Like there is a good thing that's coming from this really difficult, hard way that the shepherd's taking you on. Well, that gives me a little bit more joy in the middle of like where I'm at, because I may not see the other end of the valley, but like, this is still a good place to be because, you know, you trust who's doing it. Seemingly easy way isn't necessarily the right way. All right, man, I got one more question for you. What's a hard thing you're currently working through?
I wouldn't like label it as hard in terms of like not something that I want. Now at this point in my life, like I pursue hard things on purpose because the easy way doesn't feel right for me.
Sure.
Or it's just rarely presented to me. But you know, I took this opportunity in Las Vegas to work with Underdogs Athletics, and like I said, it's not hard in a bad way, but you know, we're trying to build a legacy brand in the CrossFit space, and I would say that they've, prior to me even coming here, they've had a big head start. Like Justin, the head coach and owner, is an incredible human being and an incredible coach. So they've begun to build a legacy, but like, you know, I want to continue to do that and build out like a legacy business model behind it and around it. And we've got a long ways to go. And we've got some other players in the space that have had a big head start, and they've got a lot of great things going for them. And so, again, I don't mean it hard as in bad, but like it's just a fun uphill battle to build a legacy brand in the CrossFit space and to bring the athletes along with us and all the aspiring competitors around the world that do our programming and will eventually do our programming. And so that's the, I would say, currently the hard thing that I'm pursuing and loving everything about it.
How long ago did you make the transition?
I moved here like a month ago.
Okay, so this is brand new.
Yeah, I mean, I started working technically like 6 weeks ago. So I think I moved like 5 weeks ago, but I got started 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, this is a startup. It's a 11-month-old company. And so, you know, we've got the comp trains, we've got the mayhems, we've got the misfits, we've got the think tanks, you know. Yeah. So we're, you know, we've got a lot of people to look up to and aspire to be like, but we've got a whole different thing that we're trying to build over here. And like I said, legacy brand, and that's a lot of weight to be an enduring business, but also an enduring brand in a rapidly growing sports space. So just, you know, just juggling a lot and moving really fast and trying to be precise and strategic at the same time. So that's the hard thing I'm doing now.
Yeah. So what was it that like convinced you that was the right move?
I mean, I'm an underdog.
Is the name.
Yeah. obviously the name registers with me deeply, but I sold my last company last March and took a, what was supposed to be a 6-month, but it ended up being like an 8-month long road trip around the country. And during that time, I got to reconnect with a handful of friends, but I also made a lot of new friends. And that speaks to the community piece of CrossFit, because I just dropped into CrossFits all around the country. Yeah. And while I was in Vegas, met Justin, met Danielle, met a, you know, Bethany, Vinny, like a handful of other people here with the Underdogs crew, and Ashley. And, you know, Justin and I became acquaintances right away. And I think that progressed into somewhat of a pseudo friendship. And, you know, I just began to learn more about the company and just felt drawn to Justin as a human. I think he's a great human, and he's a world-class coach, and he's been doing this a very long time. And I like to be surrounded by people I can learn from. And if I'm being honest, I rarely find people like that. So I was just, you know, really excited to be able to help build something alongside of him. And so when the opportunity presented itself, I took it. And, you know, it's nice to, I didn't particularly want to be in Vegas, but I'm really liking that I came. You know, I lived at the beach before here. So like going from the beach to the desert is kind of a hard jump.
Yeah. That's not the same lifestyle.
Yeah. Sure. But I don't regret it. I've enjoyed it very much. Love this, you know, I love the environment here. Love the people I get to work with, and, you know, Vegas is cool too. I've enjoyed it.
We moved from Seattle to Phoenix, which was like a crazy, literally everything about it was different. The type of people, the way the buildings looked, the weather, like all of it. And it
Yeah. Totally culture shock.
Yeah. 100%. So
you're in the desert.
That was the desert season, like in and of itself. So, it was good, but, it was never meant to be long-term. So
got it. Anyways.
Yeah. Well, hey man, I appreciate you taking time and being willing to talk and share your story. My prayer and hope is that it's an encouragement for somebody who hears it, that like in the middle of their hard thing, that there's some hope and perspective offered. So
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. We hope you're encouraged today and have a newfound hope to persevere. Be sure to subscribe for more great episodes and conversations. And if you ever want to watch an episode, check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/ElitesRS. Have a blessed day.